Today is Women's Wednesday on Mind Talk. I am your host, Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Women's Wednesday, we focus on all things for and about women.
We are having a conversation today about a very difficult and not talked about enough topic, and that is the issue of sibling abuse. We're going to be joined by author and survivor, Nancy Kilgore. Nancy Kilgore, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Nancy, you have written an important book, a difficult book, and a personal story, The Girl in the Water. Tell us where the title comes from.
The Girl in the Water basically comes from a little girl that I met and connected with as I wrote the story. It was so difficult to write, and a little girl came out of basically the water and told me what to write about and what was difficult in being abused by her sister.
Mm-hmm. So the title has a very personal significance to you.
Very personal.
Why write this book?
You know, when I first started contemplating writing this book, I knew that in America this issue was not on the radar of concern.
Mm-hmm.
There was a part of me that really got in touch with the fact that my freedom as an American citizen was taken away, and that's what made me basically stand up and write. And I had to go against all beliefs that this is not something that's even important in America to look at.
And your family, they weren't too thrilled about your writing this book, is that correct?
That's correct. I have actually been told that I could get sued, or different threats have come to me, and
from your family?
From my family, and I basically, like a lot of sibling abuse survivors, am in a process what's called shunning, and I don't know, probably over 45 of my family members, because I have stood up about this and talked about this.
Well, I certainly want to thank you for your bravery in writing this book. You dedicate your book to Damien Stifler, a 3-year-old who was killed on August 17th by his 6-year-old sister and 5-year-old friend.
Right.
Why? Why do you dedicate this book to Damien?
I read that article many, many years ago, and I never, ever wanted him to be forgotten. And he represents millions of little children. There are approximately 19 million children per year in America who are abused.
19 million.
19 million, and there are 40 million adult sibling abuse survivors out there right now who are limping in various stages because of sibling abuse.
You say that you are still in the process of healing. Is that correct?
I think it will be lifelong. And the reason that it's lifelong is that in the beginning stages of the brain for the young child, the neurological network is basically, the tracks are being set,
mm-hmm.
or they're being put in motion. And the brain is basically like wet clay at that point, and then it gets hardened. And these beliefs that came through the abuse of a sibling stay for a long, long time. I have something, a dynamic called PTSD.
Yes.
And it's a challenge for me every single day of my life.
For those listening who are unaware, can you tell us what PTSD means and how it affects you on a daily basis?
PTSD is a dynamic where the brain is basically overwhelmed at a particular point in time by an event or a series of events. PTSD, the symptoms of PTSD are agitation, anxiety, difficulty with decisions, depression, wanting to isolate, repetition of the event, so forth and so on.
That's a lot to carry.
It is. It is. And I've had a lot of trauma work, so a lot of the symptoms have subsided for me. Enough to still make me humbled, however, and when I work with a sibling abuse survivor or talk with a sibling abuse survivor, I have rapport with them for what a hard day would be like.
Yeah. You really get it. Unfortunately, you really do understand what they're going through.
So many of us are misdiagnosed over time. And the issue of sibling abuse really doesn't come out in therapy situations.
And, certainly as a therapist, I can say that there, for some therapists, it would not even occur to ask about it or to label it as such when hearing about it.
Right. I'm a conference presenter to social workers and counselors and therapists, so forth, so on, and it seems to be a huge awareness base for them after I've done the training when I have pinpointed the issue of sibling abuse.
In your book, you say, and I'm quoting now, the ability to convince our siblings to apologize, to love us, and to make right what they did to us may never happen in our lifetimes. This is our time to be heard. And you know, Aunt Nancy, even though you and I have never met, I can almost hear the anger and the passion and the strength of your voice as you say, this is our time to be heard.
Exactly. This issue throughout mankind or womankind has been alive and kicking, and it really has never been given the attention, and it is definitely a tragedy. 10% of the murders in the American family happen because of this issue. It is the number one reason for child abuse. It's not parents and step-parents. The volume comes from siblings. Siblings create the number one portion of domestic violence and incest. America doesn't want to look at this.
Well, no, and even, I mean, even though I know the information, I mean, just to hear it, it does kind of take your breath away that the numbers are so huge.
Exactly.
And that the numbers represent real-life human beings.
Real-life human beings who, in many stages of their life, will be limping, trying to find solutions to symptoms that at times will be triggered by events and stress in their lives.
You say in the book that you became an orphan at the age of 4, but you were living with mother, father, sibling. Talk about what you meant by that.
At that particular time, my family lived in Italy, and I am a Navy child. We were in the Navy, and my mother in Europe was having babies pretty fast. And in that process of having babies coming into our home, my mother basically gave me to my sister so that she would parent me.
She gave you to your sister. At one point, she actually told you that your sister Sherry was your new mommy.
That's right. And this is an important, thank you for asking, this is an important dynamic of prevention of sibling abuse, is that children should never be in charge of other children.
Now, you know, that's going to step on a lot of listening toes because, as you know, many times parents will use the older sibling as the babysitter, the housekeeper, the, you know, keeper of all things the parents don't feel as though they have time to deal with. But you're saying that you should never put a sibling in charge of a sibling.
Exactly. And what we need to be aware of in our economy is that a lot of children are alone with each other without supervision.
Right. And it can be very scary. You say that your relationship with your sister became stressful and ambivalent, and in fact, you characterize it as the most stressful, ambivalent relationship of your life.
My entire life, yes.
Your entire life.
My entire
you describe
life.
Yourself as becoming an endangered little girl.
Right.
What did you mean?
I was endangered in many, many ways because my mother, and like a lot of parents out there, don't want to hear about the discord or cannot understand how to navigate the discord between siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't hear about it. There were no real family meetings about the secrets in the house. And I had a difficult passage in my life because there was no one to talk to about it. And many of us are told that if we tell, we're going to be killed.
Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, there was a time or two, or perhaps more, when you actually did try to talk to your mom, correct?
Oh, I did several times.
And what kind of responses would you get from your mom?
My mom basically said, you know, be a nice girl. Let's have some ice cream. Or she just would not attend to the issue of conflict and aggression between my sister and I, or basically the aggression that was coming towards me.
Towards you. Nancy, I'm going to ask you to speak directly into your phone. I'm losing your voice in some places. Terrific. So you would talk to your mom about what was a scary, frightening, abusive encounter between you and your sister, and your mom would tell you to have some ice cream.
Right.
Amazing.
And so after a while, my little brain just thought there's no one to go to, and I stopped trying to mm-hmm. attempt justice in my family.
So you learned to shut down and to be quiet and to keep yourself to yourself.
Exactly.
You talk about the times that you and your sister played well together, but then there was the emotional abuse. Can you give us an example of what you lived through?
Well, thank you. When you do go through sibling abuse, it's not all the time. So you do have pockets of time where it's absolutely delightful, but you do go through pockets of time where it's tumultuous, and it's kind of like the cycle of domestic violence that battered women go through. It just kind of builds up, and then boom, you've got abuse again. The abuse that I went through, the biggest abuse that I had, there were several pockets. However, at 10, I was suffocated with a pillow.
You were suffocated by your sister?
Yes.
With a pillow?
With a pillow.
What was going on?
My mother went actually to the grocery store, and so my sister had quite a bit of access to me, and my other two siblings were utilized in pinning me down.
So your sister engaged your younger siblings?
Right.
In the abuse?
In the abuse.
And how old were they at the time?
I would say they were 4 and 5.
So, you know, I mean, certainly we know that if one child is abused and there are other children in the home, that it's not likely to escape the other children. So, you know, I would certainly say that as your 4 and 5-year-old siblings were being required to tie you down, that was abusive for them as well.
Exactly. And I have often thought about their recovery process in all of this as well. As I have, from 10 to 38, I had no recollection of what had happened.
From 10 to 38.
10 to 38.
We're going to... I'm sorry, Nancy, but we need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to pick up on the experience of having no recollection from 10 years old to 38 years old, and then something must have happened, I assume, that triggered your recollection. So we're going to take a break, and we'll pick up with that when we return. Welcome back to this edition of Mind Talk. My name is Pamela Brewer, and I am talking with author and survivor Nancy Kilgore. And Nancy, you have written a book about sibling abuse, and the title of the book is The Girl in the Water. I just want to be clear for those who may be listening and think, sibling abuse, I don't think that happens that much. She's mischaracterizing it. First of all, what you've told us is that siblings are the greatest perpetrators and victims of domestic violence, more so than parents or other adults.
Yes, we have a lot of emphasis in our culture now since the 1970s on battered women.
Mm-hmm.
The emphasis actually should be on siblings, because siblings are actually abused more than battered women. Battered women compensate about 4 million women in the sector of our society. Sibling abuse, children that are hurt by other siblings, are about 19 million. Children.
Amazing. Nancy, again, I'm going to have to just to speak directly into the phone.
Okay.
There are some people listening who are saying, okay, those numbers are really big. They're hard to imagine. She's probably just talking about sibling rivalry. She's not really talking about abuse. Is there a difference between sibling rivalry and abuse?
There is a difference between sibling rivalry and sibling abuse. Sibling abuse is where there is a child that's unwilling, and there is usually an older child and a younger child dynamic. The abuse is never welcomed by the child. It's usually done in a covert, secretive manner.
Okay.
Sibling rivalry, when we're looking at that, that's basically under the age of 4.
Okay.
Where it's age appropriate, the abuse that comes towards a child in the form of emotional, sexual, or physical is not age appropriate.
Okay, ever.
Ever.
Yeah, ever. All right. Thank you for that clarification. Just before the break, you talked about having no memory from the ages of 10 to 38. Talk more about that. And again, speak directly into the mic, if you would, as you answer this.
I did not have recollection from the age of 10 to 38 because I had what was called repressed memories. And because of a particular type of therapy, and I was always going in and doing talk therapy or support groups for my symptoms, which were heavy anxiety, agitation, and depression, and I was always going in and out of bad relationships. Because of the devastation of a really bad relationship, I went into my umpteenth million counseling session, and this particular counselor, instead of me digressing about what happened in the relationship, wanted to talk about my family life, and she asked me inquiring questions for about 3 weeks, and I really did not like the process at all. However, I went along with it, and I was asked different questions about the age differences of the children, my mother's pregnancies, where we lived, and so forth and so on.
And I'm sure that made no sense in terms, because you're coming in there to talk about a relationship.
Right. I'm coming in there to talk about my umpteenth million horrible relationship. And she's wanting to talk about my childhood and the names of children, even down to the delineation of their middle names. And so one day when I walked in, she said my sister's name, and she basically said, you know what this is, and you know who did this to you. Because on my chart, for evidently for many years, it said incest survivor, who did this to her.
Interesting. And when you saw that, when you heard that question, then what?
I basically got very, very tired. I got very aggressive with her, and I told her the session is over. And I'm usually not I wasn't a very assertive person at that point at all. And so I walked home, and I had unbelievable images of what had been done to me as I was tortured.
Tortured is a pretty big word. Can you, to the extent that you're comfortable, share with us some of the experiences that you're defining as torturous?
Well, these particular pocket of my life, I believe that I was suffocated with a pillow on more than one time. Pliers were utilized on my ears.
Pliers?
Pliers.
On your ears?
Needles were utilized to jab up my fingernails, and different ropes that were around the house were utilized. It's amazing the amount of implements that can be found in a household to torture a child.
And during, I mean, some of the things that even the snippets that you're sharing now, and you certainly talk about it in more detail in your book, The Girl in the Water, but even just hearing these little snippets, it's almost unfathomable. It's hard to imagine that a sister, and yet we know it happens, that a sister would take needles and shove them under a sister's nails.
It is very, very difficult to comprehend. It's kind of like the last sacred part of the American family that we haven't looked at. The dynamic is very equivalent to the lack of concern that went on before the 1970s toward battered women.
With these things, and I think I read that there was an incident with your eyelashes, is that correct?
Right. I was taken outside and basically tied to a post on the back porch, and tape was put around my mouth, and my eyelashes were actually taped to my forehead or top of my eyes, and a pencil was put through my mouth so that I could breathe through the tape, and I was basically out there in the sun, staring at the sun
with my
eyelashes attached to my forehead and tape around my mouth.
How long did this go on?
I would say that the abuse primarily stopped, the physical abuse primarily stopped probably about 14.
When you were 14?
Mm-hmm. The emotional abuse, however, went on until the day my sister left the room. The emotional abuse, however, has really never stopped in my life. My sister is basically what I call the top of the mafia in my family, and she has orchestrated this shunning process that I go through right now.
How much of an age difference is there between you and your sister?
There is close to probably about 3 years, very close to 3 years.
Okay. You know, one has to wonder how she even learned to think of these things, to do these things. Do you have any thoughts? Does she say anything to you about her own behavior?
I really don't know how to capitulate how her thoughts were.
Mm-hmm.
What I am concerned about as far as today's children is that they're getting a lot of information about how to be aggressive through television,
yes,
video games, and they're very, very aggressive with their cell phones. So the opportunity to be even more aggressive than my sister is huge today, and that's why I care so much.
When you say, and again, just if you could speak directly into the mic, when you say that cell phones are used aggressively, what are you referring to?
The cell phones are utilized by siblings to transmit pictures of siblings in humiliating circumstances.
Okay.
And siblings are very definitely a part of the bullying dynamic that we have in America and also the world. When a child is bullied by or abused by their sibling, they will bully other children. Or when a child is abused by a sibling, they will send out signals to other children of being a victim, mm-hmm. and will be looked upon as prey to other children. And Vernon Wehe has actually linked bullying to sibling abuse.
Mm-hmm. And you have a website where you have information to help parents with respect to bullying. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And can you give us that website address?
It's www.siblingbullies.com.
Siblingbullies.com. And we will certainly put that up on the Facebook and MindTalk Twitter page. When you say bullying, it sounds like you're talking about a wide range of behaviors, including emotional abuse, including verbal abuse. What goes into bullying? When you say bullying, what are you thinking of?
I'm talking in terms of the epidemic of bullying that is showing up in many front lines in our culture, basically school. And the emphasis needs to be made that sibling abuse is connected to bullying. Bullies are coming from the American home.
Mm.
And we think in America that we just need to buy a kit or have some sort of an assembly about anger and getting along. But the emphasis really needs to be on the fact that the bullies are coming from the American home. Bullies are actually practicing on their siblings.
I know this is a hard subject, and I'm so appreciative of your willingness to write this book, certainly, and to talk about this. When we come back from the break, what I'd like for you to give the listeners a sense of is what bullying might look like for their child. Might it be a behavior? Might it be language? What might it actually be? And then I'd like for you to talk about how a child might behave who's being bullied or who is bullying, because parents need to understand that their child might be the bully or might be the victim of the bully. So I know I'm asking you to do a whole bunch, but when we come back from the break, that's where we'll start.
Thank you.
All righty, folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We will be right back. Welcome back to this edition of Mind Talk. This is Pamela Brewer, and I want to give you a little bit more background on my guest today. Nancy Fox Kilgore received her master's degree from the University of Maryland. I'm sorry, the University of Oregon. Nancy, I moved you there. master's degree from the University of Oregon and a BA in teaching credentials from the University of California, Sacramento. Nancy Fox Kilgore is a frequent speaker and university continuing education teacher. She specializes in PTSD and various forms of family abuse. She has written Every 18 Seconds, which many of us are familiar with, and The Source book for working with battered women. both of which serve as national models for battered women's shelters, agencies, and university studies. And again, Nancy's website is www.siblingbullies.com. So Nancy, you've been doing this a long time and have made your voice that was so silenced so painfully for so long, you have made it a loud voice and a powerful voice on behalf of those who have been abused as siblings and by siblings. So I do thank you once again for that.
I appreciate that so much.
Let's talk about bullying behavior. How does a parent think about examples of bullying behavior, either that his or her child has experienced or is doling out to someone?
Bullying behavior is very much like the dynamic of what we consider an abusive male going towards an abused female. Or many of the dynamics of domestic violence.
So it's verbal?
It's verbal, it's emotional, and it's sexual. It's usually done in secret dynamics that are pretty covert.
You were called a lot of names by your sister. What were some of the things she called you?
I was basically told that I think one of the most hurtful things is that I genetically wasn't a human being. And I went to bed many, many nights believing that I was genetically a monkey.
Nancy, I need you to speak directly into the mic. I really want folks to hear what you're saying. So you were told that you were not a human being, that genetically you were a monkey. That's how you would go to sleep thinking of yourself.
And that my parents, my real parents, were going to come from a zoo and pick me up. I believed this because I basically trusted my older sister as a sister figure and a mother figure.
Yeah.
So anything she said, I believed her.
Anything she said, you believed. Talk about the freedom. And the tears. I was struck when you talk about your sister getting married and having you as her maid of honor, which is interesting, but that you shed tears, and they weren't tears of joy for the bride. They were tears of concern for the groom.
I actually was, and I think that fear or concern has always been in place. I watched my brother-in-law over time almost become mute. He's not a very assertive person, and I've always been concerned about him.
Again, Nancy, I need you right into the mic. So to this day, do you have concerns for your brother-in-law?
I absolutely do. I absolutely do. I know that my sister is very controlling, very dominating.
How did your life change after she married and left? Because the two of you shared a room, yes? So after she married and left, were you in the room alone? Did you have your other siblings with you? What changed?
I actually had, for the first time in 18 years, a room all to myself.
For the first time in 18 years.
Right. So I was in captivity in a room with my sister for 18 years.
It's almost impossible to imagine. And during these 18 years, your mother, your father, your other siblings, where were they as they all aged and as you aged? And I would think as they saw you sort of, you know, disappear, where were they in your life?
They were always in my life. I was, however, the one who was showing dysfunction. I had a dysfunctional beginning adulthood. I was oftentimes depressed, or I was doing very impulsive, immature things. And so there, a lot of gossip started occurring about the things that I was doing. I was basically acting out the trauma of my childhood.
So what kinds of things were you doing?
I was in dysfunctional relationships.
Okay.
I had difficulty understanding money. I got into money problems. Adult figures or supervisors, when I was a beginning teacher, were mm-hmm. very threatening to me. I had a very difficult time dealing with people that were in powerful positions. And I was sending out signals to them that they could abuse me.
And when you say that you were sending out signals, you know, in years past, I've talked to people who have experienced various forms of abuse. And invariably, somebody will call up and say, well, why didn't you just go? Or, well, you must have liked it because you stayed, or you didn't tell anybody. And I know you've heard people say those kinds of things before. Can you speak to those comments?
I appreciate them very much so. The victim of sibling abuse is actually re-victimized through their family, because their comments, or when they start to remember, are disputed by their family members. And so there's a re-victimization process. This process is universal all over this country and the world, of re-victimization of the victim.
The re-victimization of the victim, and that this process is universal all over the world, can you say more about what you mean when you say that? I mean, that's such a huge comment.
Well, there is such a disbelief that a sibling could be abusive. And as I have studied this for nearly 16 years, my belief is, why can't we even look at this? And so sibling abuse survivors are actually disputing themselves.
Yeah.
They cannot really fathom. It's a very primitive part of the human being to bond with family members. The loyalty is so deep in the human being to keep the family together.
You know, I'm thinking of someone I talked to some while ago who was talking about a very painful childhood, and talking about how he was treated. And when I said that it sounded like he had been abused by his siblings, you know, it was like there was this huge silence in the room, and then tears. So many tears.
Yes. And I have gone through this dynamic, as I have sibling abuse survivors for the first time.
Nancy, I'm losing you. I need you to talk into the mic.
I have had the same dynamic as I have broached topics of sibling abuse with adults, and for them to connect with the fact that they went through abuse. It's just not validated to talk about this issue. It's gone underground for too long.
Much too long.
Too long.
Much too long. What are your goals as you move forward with this book, with your work? You know, let's wave a magic wand. What would you like the world to be?
Well, I first of all would like to be able to go on television. And this has been very, very difficult for me to get on television, because television producers basically want me to go on television and it be a Jerry Springer show with my sister.
Oh.
And so when I have been asked to go on, and I have not been able to get any sibling to go on with me and talk about this issue, I've been dropped. And I would like to get on television and actually be a face.
Okay. Be able to talk to people about what's happened in your life. That would be, I think, important, because, you know, it's true that not only are you giving people your voice, but when you can actually show up and be present physically, it gives people a different sense of how real this really is in the world.
Yes, I was told if I could collect other sibling abuse survivors to go on television with me, that might be a show. And that is a very, very time-consuming to find sibling abuse survivors to go on a television show.
Well, it's also very dismissive.
Yes.
You know, you have a story, you have a perspective, you're nationally known and respected, and to say you're not enough, but it seems to me, and maybe this is an, I don't know, over-dramatization, you have to tell me, but it seems to me that that in and of itself is almost a re-victimization. And I understand that television has its needs and, you know, there's good television and bad television, but quite frankly, your story is so compelling and your passion around making a difference is so compelling that for somebody to tell you your story is not enough is absurd.
It was. It was actually, I felt re-victimized.
Okay.
And pretty dismissed when this process occurred where the television producers were dropping it.
That's amazing. We could have 10 hours of conversation about that. Let me move a little bit forward to where you are in your life today. The last chapter in your book, Before Thoughts for Our Nation, is Free at Last. Can you speak to that sense of free at last? Is there ever a time or a place that's free?
I am so committed to this issue until the day I die. So I will never exactly be free from, I think, the gauntlet that I have taken up. I don't see a lot of people like me taking up this gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do have freedom, and I look forward to collectivizing sibling abuse survivors in support groups all over America with a manual so that they can run their own support groups.
Is there a way for people to contact you if they want to talk to you more about this?
The website that I gave,
okay.
www.siblingbullies.com, is a way to connect with me.
Okay. It is so critical. You know, it's kind of like the issue of parental abuse when the abuser is a mother, and we don't talk about that as much as we need to. And clearly we don't talk about sibling abuse as much as we need to. So anyone who's listening who has an experience that he or she wants to share with Nancy, I hope it's okay, Nancy, to encourage them to reach out to you via your website.
I would love to hear from them.
Okay. All right. And Nancy, I will make sure that the contact information is on Mind Talk's Facebook page. Nancy, we're going to take a break and we will return in just a moment. This is Pamela Brewer welcoming you back to this edition of Mind Talk and a continuation of the dialogue with Nancy Kilgore, who's author of The Girl in the Water. Nancy, I'd like to turn our dialogue specifically to a document that you have available via your website, How to Bully-Proof a Child. And the first thing that you say, which is stunning but of course true, And the numbers are smaller than they are in fact, as we know, because kids don't report this. But you say that nearly 1 in 5 students in an average classroom has experienced bullying.
That's correct.
And we know that's a tiny number because bullies bully the child into not telling what's going on.
That's correct. There is almost the same dynamic of what a child goes through that's being abused by a sibling.
Right.
It's very covert, very secretive.
Nancy, I'm losing you. I need you in the mic, directly into the mic. You also quote the National Association of School Psychologists in saying that more than 160,000 children skip school every day because they feel threatened by another student. Every single day, over 160,000 children are afraid to go to school.
Absolutely.
Afraid their peers will hurt them.
Their peers will hurt them. And they're dealing with a lot of parents out there don't want to hear about the discord or cannot understand how to navigate the discord between siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't hear about it, but it is a part of why many children are absent from school.
You know, one of the things that I often say to parents who will complain, sometimes even in passing, you know, they're not coming in to deal with their child, but they'll say in passing, you know, my kid never wants to go to school. It's so annoying. I always have to force them to go to school. And I think what you would say to that parent is please ask questions about why the child doesn't want to go to school.
Absolutely, to ask questions. And a lot of parents, when they do find out what's happening or that a child has bullied their child, is they will go after the other parent. And it's actually counterproductive to the whole process.
When you say they'll go after the other parent, what do you mean?
They will confront the parent. Your child has hurt my child. And the dynamic can actually, or the abuse can actually get worse for the victimized child, because this will just blow up all over the playground or in different situations for the victimized child.
Well, then,
so it's important to go to administrative situations within schools to broach this.
Not to go. Well, you tell us. What specifically do you want parents to know about how to deal with bullying when they are alerted or they discover it?
Well, it's important to basically have the stance toward the bullied child that they're not tough enough or they're insecure or they're sensitive or whatever, but just to basically validate for the child that this would be hard for anyone to go through.
Okay, because a lot of parents will say, and I know you've heard this, you know, my child is too sensitive. You know, he or she needs to just toughen up. I mean, they're just going to go through life, and they're always going to meet bullies. If they don't figure out how to ignore it now, they never will. And what do you say to those parents?
Well, basically the stance of toughening up or admonishing the child is not helpful to the child. The child feels a great deal of shame, first of all, and victimization from the bully. So that is re-victimizing them with that sentence structure.
So what do you want parents to think about saying to their bullied child?
I love you. I don't validate this behavior. I'm on your side. Where I want to know what's happening. I want to hear the different things that are occurring. I want us to pinpoint where the bullying might happen at your school. I want you to have a partner or a friend that you can walk past these pre-pivotal points or passages of their school day. Basically giving the child more strategy, but also believing in the child for their ability to think out how to be in self-preservation. And that's what this is all about.
So you don't want
preservation.
You don't want a parent to instruct their child to, you know, if somebody hits you, you hit them back. If they yell at you, you yell back. You don't want the parents to do that, because many parents do.
No, I don't advocate that. I think it makes situations escalate. If we can look through the school day as far as where the bullying might occur and have a counter way to handle things, let's say a lot of times children have their lunch monies taken away from them or stolen, and perhaps they might bring a lunch, or different things protocols might go into place so that the bully is aware that the child is not so, vulnerable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What if a parent is told that his or her child is the bully? Then what? What does that parent do?
Important for the parent to relate to the child that their behavior is not something that is going to be endorsed, that child is loved. There's usually a reason why the child is a bully to other children, and it could be a huge portion of the bullying dynamic is that it's occurring in their own home.
Mm. Now, when you say that, I wonder how willing the parent of an abused child would be to actually deal with the administration at school, or to deal with their child.
I would say that it's one of the most effective protocols in place, rather than going toward the other child that is being aggressive or the parent of the aggressive child, which is counterproductive to the process. The abused child could actually get hurt worse.
The abused child could get hurt worse.
Exactly.
All right. And you list some examples of physical bullying, to include hitting, punching, kicking, as well as the destruction of or stealing a child's property. So you don't see that as kids will be kids behavior. You see that as serious behavior that has to be addressed.
I see bullying as very serious, because the dynamic of bullying is usually happening to a young child.
Mm-hmm.
And the young child's neurological networks are being set up in the very beginning of their life. And to have bullying happening is very traumatizing to the child. And the belief systems of bullying are, I must be bad,
yes,
I'm not worthwhile,
uh-huh,
I can't predict what's going to happen, life is out of control. And so these, what are called cognitions,
mm-hmm,
stay with the child for a very, very long time. And I don't think that talk therapy jumpstarts the brain.
Hmm.
When you've had beginning reinforcement that is so negative.
When I look at your list of verbal bullying examples, you indicate teasing, name-calling, taunting, spreading gossip, malicious rumors through emails, instant messages, text messages, websites, and blog posts. And a lot of parents don't realize the power of those kinds of things in their child's life. It take us through, just very briefly if you can, some of the signs of bullying, so that if a parent's child is behaving in this way, the parent knows to at least do some investigations.
The signs of bullying are exactly corollary to the symptoms of PTSD, and that would be a shutdown child,
okay,
a depressed child, a child that's not talking, a child that is not asserting their wants, a child who is sad,
Okay.
A child who is evoking or emitting physical ailments, stomach aches, headaches, wanting to stay home from school a lot.
And even suicidal thoughts, yes?
Even suicidal thoughts. Avoidance of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Not wanting contact with other people. These are the basic symptoms of PTSD.
And they are, and I thank you for that, and certainly would recommend that folks go to your website. And again, as we wrap up this hour that has disappeared much too quickly, I again truly want to thank you for your work, for your willingness to use your voice on behalf of so many. Nancy Kilgore, author of The Girl in the Water. Nancy, anything that you would like to say in 2 seconds or less?
I am just so grateful to have had this opportunity, and I hope it was healing for someone in your audience.
Thank you. I have no doubts that it is and will continue to be. Thank you, Nancy Kilgore. And again, I'll put up your contact information on the Mind Talk Facebook and Twitter as well. Thank you very much, Nancy Kilgore, author of... Nancy, you want to give us the name of your book again?
Girl in the Water.
Girl in the Water. Girl in the Water, A True Story of Sibling Abuse. Thank you, Nancy Kilgore, very much for your time and for your honesty.
Oh, thank you.
All righty. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Folks, this is Dr. Pamela Brewer thanking you for joining me on this edition of Mind Talk, which has been produced by Jim Brown for 26x2 Productions. I do appreciate your time and your attention this hour. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286, 301-654-5286. The email address is mindtalk@aol.com. The web address is mindtalk.com. Facebook, just look for MindTalk. And on Twitter, it's @MindTalk. And that spelling is MyNDTALK. That's MyNDTALK. Please remember, if it's unacceptable, that is precisely what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.